So I like to work on just drive drop. My drilling partner, Ryan, will be across the net from me. I'll be at the baseline and I'll hit a drive, then a drop. And if it's a little deeper, I'll hit another drive. You know, I'm not going to do something different from what I would do in a game. And obviously in games, the deeper and harder the shot is, the more likely you should be to just drive it low. And then they're going to hit up on their volley. So that's what I'll do. I'll work on drive drop with my drilling partner. And if I see a ball that I would drop in a game, I'll drop it. And if I see a ball that I would drive in a game, I'll drive it.
For over 10 years, innovation has been at the core of who we are at Selkirk. We take risks, we test, we evolve. Introducing the Selkirk Lab 007. With an Infinigrid surface that lasts at least 3 times longer than rock carbon, and a titanium mesh layer for added power, while maintaining the largest sweet spot available. Because good is never good enough.
Okay, thank you for tuning in to another one of my episodes. We're back. I'm here in Milwaukee right now, which actually this is my first time ever coming to Wisconsin, just in general. And now I'm here in Milwaukee and I'm pleasantly surprised. It's pretty nice. I only had low expectations because of what I had heard about it from everybody else, which is generally the only thing you can really base your expectations on. I mean, and I'm here now and I'm liking it. The weather is actually pretty good. The court situation is pretty good too. We're playing at the Baird Center. I think it's a convention center area. It's like a ballroom and the courts are pretty solid. I would say one thing that I've noticed that is important probably to note here is that when you're going to put pickle roll down on a court, one of the issues with Vegas, and I'm not complaining about PPA Vegas, but I think one of the maybe the issues with those courts was that the surface underneath the pickle roll was not that hard and not that strong. And I think that's actually more important than the pickle roll itself. So people were complaining about the pickle roll. I don't think it was the pickle roll's fault in Vegas, because obviously people were complaining about the PPA Vegas bounces being bad and whatnot. Really, it wasn't the pickle roll. It was the surface underneath that had like some uneven spots and it just wasn't that strong. But here in Milwaukee, we're playing on pickle roll also, or something similar to pickle roll, it seems like. And the ground itself it's like almost a cement type of ground. It's a very hard, solid ground. And I think that is something that definitely helps the pickle roll. I think if you have a pickle roll set up on a super hard surface, I think it makes it easier. I think the bounces are more true from what I've seen. Because obviously pickle roll can lend itself to some questionable bounces, but it is what it is. I mean, pickle roll has its pros and cons. You know, you can put it anywhere, but I think if you can actually put it on a very hard surface, it's a very playable material. This is not an ad for pickle roll, but anyway, I think that's what you need. You need the hard surface. Okay, we're here in Milwaukee. Did a few drills today. We're going to talk about some of the drills that I've been doing recently that have been helping me a lot. I think the main drill is just a different game where we're working on, you know, it's funny because people talk about resetting the ball. You talk about resetting the ball from the transition zone, or you talk about resetting the ball from the baseline. And rarely are people talking about that reset from, you know, 3 feet inside the kitchen line, where let's say you're almost in, you've got maybe one more dead dink or you know, just safe dink to hit on your end before you can actually get into the kitchen. And that's something that I think, you know, getting from that defensive dinking position to a neutral dinking position is something that separates a lot of good players from very good players. And for me, I was working on that a lot today. So it would just be my partner at the kitchen line. He would feed a ball to me and I would just start 4 feet behind the kitchen line. So I'm not starting back. I'm not even really starting in the transition. I'm starting a little bit closer from, you know, the transition zone to the kitchen. So 4 feet behind the kitchen line is where I'm starting. And he hits the ball at my feet at a pretty average pace, nothing crazy. And then we just play it out down the line. I'm a big believer, I've said this many times, I'm a big believer in point-based drilling. So the drilling is a point within itself. You're not just cooperatively hitting the ball back and forth. I think that cooperatively hitting the ball back and forth can be helpful if you're a 3-5 and you're just looking to get better at striking the ball and making contact with the ball, 3-5 below that is. But as you get better, you're going to want to build your game and your mentality when you're actually playing the point to be one that is, you know, sort of consistent. You're always kind of approaching hitting the ball the same way. And if you're approaching hitting the ball, you know, in practice all the time, just in a cooperative manner, just kind of lackadaisical, whatever that word is, doing it, and then you go to a game and you have to flip the switch, I think that's a lot harder to do than if, you know, every practice you're kind of treating it like a game. You know, that's what I do. I treat every practice like a game. I think a lot of the best athletes in any sport treat their practices more or less like a game, whether it's actually playing a game or if they're just kind of mentally getting in that zone. And that's a tougher thing to do in pickleball. So that's why I think just, you know, practicing where it actually is a game, you force yourself to treat it like a game. I think that's the way to do it. So drill number one, me 4 feet behind the kitchen line. My partner is at the kitchen line. He feeds it at my feet. We play it out down the line. You can also have some variations here. Since I'm starting in a little bit of a disadvantageous position because I'm 4 feet behind the kitchen line, maybe I've got to get to 5, and Ryan, my partner, who's starting up at the kitchen line, he has to get to 7. We can do the same thing cross court, and we can do the same thing where I'm kind of putting my resets in the middle. You don't always want to do this one down the line, and I would also say to definitely remember this, you do not always want to practice your resetting down the line and cross court. I think there's a lot of situations where you should just be practicing your resetting dead center into the middle. I actually think the safest place to reset the ball is dead center in the middle. I've said this a lot. A lot of pros also do this. If you watch the top pros, a lot of our resets are going right into the middle. Obviously, the net is shorter in the middle by a couple inches, and there's also less angles for your opponent to work with if they're attacking from the middle instead of from the sideline. So I would say that's another area where I don't see a lot of players working on, just practicing resetting the ball dead center to the middle and just get comfortable, because especially as you get better too, if you're always resetting down a line, it does two things. It makes it easier for, let's say I'm playing against you and you reset the ball down the line. I've got one option, which is to Ernie it. And I understand that a lot of the viewers are not dealing with players who Ernie often, so that's okay. But the other main thing that I can do is if you get that reset a little bit high, I can go cross court angle with a lot of pace because there's a lot of space going cross court. If you reset to the middle, that angle doesn't really exist as much because of the geometry of the court. Angle from here is a lot more steep than an angle from here. So reset to the middle, that's another thing I would say to do. And another thing I would say, and one of my favorite drills, is just serve, return, third. So I hit the serve, my opponent hits the return, my partner hits the return, and then I hit a third shot. And then they will just catch my third shot, and then they'll hit the serve, I'll hit the return, and then they'll hit the third shot. I think this is obviously the most realistic way to practice hitting third shots, because, you know, there's a lot of players, and I've seen it in my clinics, they just practice their third shots where they're hitting third shots at the baseline, and then their partner's up at the kitchen line, and they're just rallying back and forth. They're hitting their fourth at the kitchen, and then I'm just hitting my third shot, and it's just, you know, that's kind of just how it's going back and forth. But that's not actually the realistic timing of how a third shot happens. A third shot happens after you've hit your serve and your partner or your opponent, that is, sorry, has hit their return. It's a different type of timing, and it's just a different way of going about the shot, because you hit a serve, you've got some momentum moving forward, you've got to maybe take a step back in a lot of situations, and then you've got to set up and hit your third shot. It's a totally different way of going about it than if, you know, you're just hitting third shot after third shot after third shot. I think there is, you know, you can kind of liken it to basketball, for example, where players are not in basketball always working on just catch and shoot, catch and shoot, catch and shoot. You know, there's also times where they're going to work on dribbling and kind of getting themselves cold and then shooting. You know, you work on your off the bounce and then you shoot it. Basically, what I'm saying is if you're always working on hitting a third shot off of your opponent's fourth shot and you get yourself into a perfect rhythm every single time you practice, I don't think it'll be as easy for you to then go out into a game and then, you know, you haven't hit a third shot in a full minute and 30 seconds, right? And then you've got to hit one. And then you have a serve and then a return. And then maybe your partner hits it the first, you know, side out. And then it's your turn. You know, you're not hitting a third shot over and over and over again in a game. You're hitting it once every minute and 30. So I think that serve, return, and third drill does two things. It allows you to work on your serve. And it also allows you to work on your third shots in a way that's a little more cold, so to speak. You're kind of cold. I think there's an element to that that is very helpful. So if that makes sense to you, let me know. If it doesn't, let me know. Also, I'm trying to respond to all my comments. I haven't responded to all my comments on my last couple of videos. That's going to change. Sorry about that, guys. Okay, guys, big news. There is a holiday bundle going on here at Selkirk. You can get a SLK paddle and two accessories. So that could be bowls, that could be a hat of your choice. Any of those amazing accessories that Selkirk has to offer as a part of this holiday bundle, you can get those for 15% off. So I would highly recommend checking it out. And yeah, one other thing too, if you see me at the tournament, I have been, my friends from home have been telling me that I'm just not that good at this. I'm not that good at engaging with fans at the tournament. I'm sorry. I'm going to make this quick. We're going to talk about coaching more. I'm so focused at the tournaments. I'm not one of those people that's really good at being like extroverted and playing like a, you know, a Tyson or like a Jaume Martinez Vic who can kind of engage with the crowd. I wish I was that guy. I wish I was good at that. I don't know. That's not how I play my best pickleball. I've tried to be more of a personable guy because I really love the fans and I appreciate everybody that comes out there and people will ask me for pictures and try to talk to me. And sometimes I'm just not that engaging. And it's just, you know, I'm somebody who can only really focus on one thing at once. So, if you see me at the tournament and you're like, wow, James was just a brick. Like James was, you know, you're probably not thinking that. I'm just overthinking it. But I'm sorry. I wish I was better, and I don't even know why I'm talking about this. Okay, next topic. Another thing that is very helpful is just doing drive drop. So I think, and this is another thing, if you're working with somebody and you're going out there with your drilling partner, I would not recommend just hitting, you know, 30 drives in a row to work on drives, and just hitting 30 drops in a row to work on drops. I fully believe that the most realistic way of practicing is the best one. And so basically what that means is the way you can practice that would most closely resemble what you would actually do in a game is the most efficient way to practice. So most of the time you're not hitting, you know, five drops in a row or five drives in a row in a point. I think what's more often seen is you'll hit a drive, then you'll hit a drop, or you'll just hit a drop. So I like to work on just drive drop. So my drilling partner, Ryan, will be across the net from me. I'll be at the baseline, and I'll hit a drive, then a drop. And if it's a little deeper, I'll hit another drive. You know, I'm not going to do something different for what I would do in a game. And obviously in games, the deeper and harder the shot is, the more likely you should be to just drive it low. And if we're not familiar on that, I'll make sure that's clear. If you're in a game situation and somebody has hit a deep, hard return to you or a deep, hard volley to you, if you're in the back, you're in a tough spot, I wouldn't try to hit a perfect drop into the kitchen. Rarely is that going to be something that I would say is successful. Not even the pros really try that. I think the deeper the ball is, you should just try to drive it low, and then they're going to hit up on their volley, and then you can drop the next one. You kind of want to save your drop until, you know, you actually feel very comfortable hitting a good drop. So that's what I'll do. I'll work on drive drop with my drilling partner, and if I see a ball that I would drop in a game, I'll drop it. And if I see a ball that I would drive in a game, I'll drive it. You really want to gear your habits toward what the most, and obviously this is different. You know, some players will drive balls that other players won't, but there is a general guidelines on what makes sense and what doesn't. So I'll do that. And last thing, this is something that there was a couple people at World Championships that asked me this. There was a couple people, so I was actually walking around at World Championships, and this was in Dallas. And I'm always walking fast. I'm always in a rush because people are always trying to talk to me now. And that's okay. I appreciate that. You know, I get that people want to engage with me at these things, but it's just a lot of times I'm just in a rush. You know, I've got matches and practices and this and that. And like, if I stop and talk to every person, I'm not going to make it. And I'm already late for a lot of my practices. You can ask my friends. So it's, anyway, there was a couple people that came up to me. It was weird. There was two people that asked me this. Wait, James, how do you know when to hit a slice drop versus a topspin drop? And it's kind of funny because, like, nobody used to ask me this stuff. And a lot of the other pros don't get asked for this stuff. But because I do this podcast and all the coaching, I've got a lot of people asking me about how to get better. Like, I was about to play my quarterfinal and somebody was asking me, like, James, like, can you tell me about the return? And I'm like, sorry, dude, no, I can't right now. Like, I'm not, you know, I'm a player first, then I'm a coach. But anyway, so... they had asked me, when do you hit a slice drop versus when do you hit a topspin drop? And I actually think it's a lot more simple than people think. As long as you can hit both. If you feel more comfortable with one or the other, then it kind of changes things. But if you feel comfortable with both, which I would recommend being comfortable with both, there's a time and place to hit a topspin drop and a slice drop. I would say that the deeper you are in the court, the more likely you should be to hit a topspin drop. The reason for that is topspin will sink down because of the spin, and a slice drop will be more likely to float because it has backspin. So I think it's tougher to hit a perfect slice drop from all the way back behind the baseline. If there's any sort of wind, a slice drop will be more affected by the wind than a topspin drop will, because a slice drop is more likely to be in the air for longer. So if you've seen a drop with a little bit of slice on it, you'll notice that it's actually kind of travels a little more slowly through the air, which is why it's easier to control and to make, I think, from a little shorter. For me, if I'm closer to the net and I've already hit a drive and I'm maybe 5 feet from the kitchen line, I'll just kind of slice it. Not even really slice it, but just kind of, it'll have a little bit of backspin, but I'm kind of just trying to bunt it in. That's easier for me. But if you try to do that from behind the baseline, it's tough to do that with a lot of precision. So if I'm behind the baseline, I'll usually drive it. Or if I'm near the baseline, I'll drive it. As I get maybe a couple feet within the baseline and I've got some time, let's say I've, you know, the ball is a little slower and I don't want to drive it, then I'll hit a topspin drop. And then if I have already hit a drive and I'm really close, I'll kind of just hit a slice drop store, or maybe even just like a bunt and just kind of poke it in. And I would say that with a slice drop, I'm almost always going to the middle. There's really not a lot of reason to go all the way to the sideline with a slice drop. I just don't think it's worth the risk. I think if you are going to hit a topspin drop, though, and you want to go for a hard cross-court angle, you know, that's something that can give you some benefits if you feel comfortable with it. But with a slice drop, I really think it just makes sense to go to the middle every single time. And with topspin drops, definitely go to the middle pretty often, too. But that's when you can use the sidelines if you want to. So yeah, we kind of hit a bunch of random topics here. That's pretty much it. One quick thing too, that's kind of a sad note. So the guy who is going to be the best lefty in the game, in the entire game of pickleball, he's totally exploded onto the scene this year. His name is Maxwell Freeman. His Instagram handle is MaxFreemanPB. And he, you know, he beat Tyson McGuffin in doubles last month, I think 11-3, 11-5. He's just been destroying a lot of the top pros. He just had match points against J.W. Johnson and Dylan Frazier 2 weeks ago. And he first picked up a paddle 9 months ago. So he's only been playing pickleball for 9 months. He's probably the most talented player I've ever seen play pickleball. And he's a lefty. So it's just across the board, he's doing things that we've never even really seen this early on, and all the pros are talking about him. It's a cool thing. He's already got a bunch of great partners. I played doubles with him once. He's played doubles now with Hurricane Tyra Black. He's playing doubles with Leia Jansen at the next two tournaments, so the other pros are seeing him. Sad note, though, he is going to probably be playing APPs. So I guess the PPA, you know, it is what it is. They've chosen not to sign him for now. And I was planning on having Max be my partner in doubles probably for 2025, for the most of part of it, but it's tough. It's, you know, that's one of these things where there's the PPA and then there's the APP, there's different tours now, and, you kind of just have to roll with the punches and see what's possible. So yeah, just give Max a follow on Instagram. Maybe if he can get his brand up, he'll say, okay, fine, I'll play PPAs with James. You know, I'm doing him this favor, shouting him out on this podcast, hoping that he'll play doubles with me. But no, it looks like he'll go APP. But anyway, yeah, check him out. He's got some highlights on his Instagram. And it's cool to watch him play. If you're a lefty, I would definitely check him out, because he's doing things that we've just never seen. I mean, it's just a crazy talent. And in tennis, he was, you know, he beat guys that were top 100 in the world, and then he switched to pickleball. So, that's it. All right, thanks for watching, guys. That's all I got.